Can we look at Job chapter 18? And that's going to be on page 507 of the Chapel Bible. And this time we're going to read chapters 18 and 19. Job chapter 18. Then answered Bildad the Shuhite and said, "How long will it be ere ye make an end of words? Mark, and afterward we will speak. Wherefore are we counted as beasts and reputed vile in your sight? He teareth himself in his anger. Shall the earth be forsaken for thee, and shall the rock be removed out of his place? Yea, the light of the wicked shall be put out, and the spark of his fire shall not shine. The light shall be dark in his tabernacle, and his candle shall be put out with him. The steps of his strength shall be straightened, and his own counsel shall cast him down. For he is cast into a net by his own feet, and he walketh upon a snare. The jinn shall take him by the heel, and the robber shall prevail against him. The snare is laid for him in the ground, and a trap for him in the way. Terrors shall make him afraid on every side, and shall drive him to his feet. His strength shall be hunger-bitten, and destruction shall be ready at his side. It shall devour the strength of his skin. Even the firstborn of death shall devour his strength. His confidence shall be rooted out of his tabernacle, and it shall bring him to the king of terrors. It shall dwell in his tabernacle because it is none of his. Brimstone shall be scattered upon his habitation. His roots shall be dried up beneath, and above shall his branch be cut off. His remembrance shall perish from the earth, and he shall have no name in the street. He shall be driven from light into darkness and chased out of the world. He shall neither have son nor nephew among his people, nor any remaining in his dwellings. They that come after him shall be astonished at his day, as they that went before were affrighted. Surely such are the dwellings of the wicked, and this is the place of him that knoweth not God." Then Job answered and said, "How long will ye vex my soul and break me in pieces with words? These 10 times have ye reproached me. Ye are not ashamed that ye make yourselves strange to me. And be it indeed that I have erred, mine error remaineth with myself. If indeed ye will magnify yourselves against me and plead against me my reproach, know now that God hath overthrown me and hath compassed me with his net. Behold, I cry out of wrong, but I am not heard. I cry aloud, but there is no judgment. He hath fenced up my way that I cannot pass, and he hath set darkness in my paths. He hath stripped me of my glory and taken the crown from my head. He hath destroyed me on every side, and I am gone, and mine hope hath he removed like a tree. He hath also kindled his wrath against me, and he counteth me unto him as one of his enemies. His troops come together and raise up their way against me, and encamp round about my tabernacle. He hath put my brethren far from me, and mine acquaintance are verily estranged from me. My kinsfolk have failed, and my familiar friends have forgotten me. They that dwell in mine house and my maids count me for a stranger. I am an alien in their sight. I called my servant, and he gave me no answer. I entreated him with my mouth. My breath is strange to my wife, though I entreated for the children's sake of mine own body. Yea, young children despised me. I arose, and they spake against me. All my inward friends abhorred me, and they whom I loved are turned against me. My bone cleaveth to my skin and to my flesh, and I am escaped with the skin of my teeth. Have pity upon me. Have pity upon me, O ye my friends, for the hand of God hath touched me. Why do ye persecute me as God, and are not satisfied with my flesh? Oh, that my words were now written. Oh, that they were printed in a book, that they were graven with an iron pen and lead in the rock forever. For I know that my Redeemer liveth, and that he shall stand at the latter day upon the earth. And though after my skin worms destroy this body, yet in my flesh shall I see God, whom I shall see for myself, and mine eyes shall behold, and not another, though my reins be consumed within me. But ye should say, why persecute we him, seeing the root of the matter is found in me? Be ye afraid of the sword, for wrath bringeth the punishments of the sword, that ye may know there is a judgment." Last time we saw Eliphaz gave a response to Job. We saw that he was drawing on his personal experience, and he was saying how, in his experience, this is what he's seen in the world. And he describes how the wicked man suffers. And by that, he's making an application that, based on what we're seeing in your life, you must be wicked. There must be something. You must have done something. And the implication was that there's some sort of sin in Job's life, and that's why he's going through what he's going through. And that was in chapter 15. And chapters 16 and 17, Job's response is really, he just bears his soul before them. And he explains what he's feeling. He explains the things that he's feeling and what it feels like and what this experience is doing to him. And he just shows his emotion to them. And he continues to defend himself that there isn't any sin that he's done, and he wants to talk to God and know, why did you let this happen to me? And what we saw last time when we were looking, we're sort of taking this, we're sort of like a bird that's flying over a forest. We're seeing the big picture. We're not really looking at each individual tree verse by verse, word by word, but we're just sort of getting some ideas in the grand scheme of this book. And we saw that suffering allows me an opportunity to be like Christ that I wouldn't get any other way. And it's something that you hesitate, you don't really want to. It's like, is there another way, Lord, that I could be more like you without having to suffer this way? But suffering allows us to be more Christ-like. Suffering, we can experience in a small way, a very tiny way, and feel similar feelings to what the Lord felt when he suffered. So it links me with him in a way that I would never be able to otherwise. And then when I suffer, I know that he suffered. And I know that whatever I'm feeling, he has felt himself. And so I have a Lord who can sympathize with me. Those were some of the things we drew from last time. And this time we're looking at Bildad. And every time when you read Bildad, you realize he's probably the least sensitive of the three friends. The first time Bildad talked to Job, Job's lost all of his children, and Bildad has the gall to say, if your children sinned, that's why they died. They got what they deserved, essentially. To say that to a grieving person who lost all of his children, it's hard to defend that. It's hard to, and you don't want to, you always have to consider yourself. We say things sometimes that are insensitive. We are capable of insensitive things, but just, it's shocking that his friends don't really have the sensitivity that's really needed in this situation for Job. And you even will see that Job's crying out for pity. He just wants sympathy from his friends, and he's not getting it. And Bildad, we saw last time that he draws on personal experience. He draws on the experiences of the past. Looking back to the past generations, you have to look back in history. And that's where you're going to find the answer for what God is doing. And that's what he was drawing on last time. And here, we see even now, as we look through this chapter, we're going to see Bildad continues to be a little bit insensitive. When he starts, he says, how long is it going to be until you stop talking? Are you just going to keep going? He says, mark. That word mark, others have it translated, consider. Some translations have the phrase, be intelligent. Be intelligent, and then we'll talk to you. The friends, each one of them is trying to explain to the other that we're not stupid. Job's friends will tell them, we have intelligence, we're smart, we're not dumb. And then Job will also be like, I'm not dumb either. And so there's this constant, every time they're talking to each other, they're trying to prove how intelligent they are. And that's not the point here. The point isn't to be smarter than the other person. The point isn't to prove the other person wrong. They're all missing the point. The point was to come and comfort Job, and now they're trying to convict Job, and they're trying to prove Job wrong. And they lost sight of what their purpose was when they came together to come to this friend and to try to offer him comfort when they heard what happened. And then, again, in verse 3, he says, "Why do you think we're stupid? Why do you think we're beasts? Why are we vile in your sight?" And then as he goes down, he talks about, "Shall the earth be forsaken for you? Shall the rock be removed out of its place? Do you think you're that important that the earth should rearrange itself for you? What kind of pride is in your heart that you think these things, that you think all of the, you have these high thoughts?" And then he goes into, he has a few different areas of what he talks to about Job. He talks about darkness. The wicked person is, their life is full of darkness. And you see that in verses 5, 6. We have this, the lack of light that's in the wicked person's life. And Job's mentioned the darkness that he's been seeing, the feelings of just his eyes are heavy. And he's being weighed down. And Bildad's talking to him, "The light of the wicked shall be put out, the spark of his fire shall not shine. The light shall be dark in his tabernacles, his candle shall be put out with him." That there's darkness in the life of the wicked person. It seems like there's just no light anywhere. Even your fires and your candles are darkness. And it's true that the wicked person, there isn't light. We know that light, the Lord would say that he is the light of the world. The wicked person doesn't have light. They live in darkness. And even you read the Gospel of John, it talks about men love darkness rather than light because their deeds were evil. So he's not wrong, but he's not applying it to Job correctly. And I think it's, we've been learning about growing in wisdom. And the more you read the book of Job, the more you're convinced that his friends had knowledge, but they lacked wisdom. They're not applying their knowledge correctly. They're saying true things. They're making statements that are accurate, but they're not true about Job. And so they're applying knowledge in the wrong way. And he talks about the darkness. Then he talks in verses 7 through 10 about how the wicked man constantly is finding himself falling into traps. The steps of his strength shall be straightened. His own counsel shall cast him down. He's cast into a net by his own feet. He walks upon a snare. The jinn shall take him by the heel. The robber shall prevail against him. The snare is laid for him in the ground and a trap for him in the way. Whatever way he goes, he finds himself caught in a trap. It's like he's an animal, and someone's laid a trap for him in the woods, and he gets caught in it, and he can't help but get caught in it. And that's what he's saying. And it even seems like it's the wicked man's own fault that he gets caught in the trap. He is cast into a net by his own feet. He walks into the snare. It's his own fault that he's getting caught into these traps, and he's finding himself just ensnared with the circumstances around him, and he's struggling and he can't get out, but it's his own fault. He walked into it. And he talks then in verses 11 through 14, he talks about death and corruption and the terrors. The terrors shall make him afraid on every side. His strength shall be hunger-bitten. Destruction is ready at his side. It shall devour the strength of his skin. Even the firstborn of death shall devour his strength. His confidence shall be rooted out of his tabernacle. It shall bring him to the king of terrors. The king of terrors is death. Every person on earth is going to die. And that's what consumes them. It's something, so much of this world is afraid of dying. You see it. You see it every day. People are afraid of death because what comes after that? There's this fear of what's after. What happens after I die? What's coming next? And so the wicked man, it consumes them, and it's destructive. It's destructive, and it's corrupting, and their strength. And he keeps talking about how their strength and their confidence is worn away by this fear of death and destruction. And it It dwells in his tabernacle because it is none of his. The brimstone shall be scattered upon his habitation. You just see these friends, none of this is comforting. Their purpose was to comfort him, and they're just talking about death and traps and weakness and destruction. And then as he goes forward, in verses 15 through 18, nothing really is lasting in the wicked man's life. His roots are dried up, his branch is cut off, his remembrance shall perish from the earth, he shall have no name in the street, and he shall be driven from light into darkness and chased out of the world. There's nothing lasting for the wicked man. There's no memory of him. Everything dries up and everything crumbles, and there's no name remembered for him. And that's something you're going to see Job craves. He wants something lasting. He feels like everything is just vanishing away and crumbling in front of him. And you'll see he wants, oh, that my words were written in a book. And you'll see that desire for something to last. And he says the wicked man doesn't have that. The wicked man, his life just, it's worthless and pointless, and everything just crumbles away and vanishes away, and nothing lasts from his life. There's nothing enduring in it. And then in verse 19, again, he shall neither have son nor nephew among his people, nor any remaining in his dwellings. Again, he talks about the lack of children to this man who just lost all of his children. We need to be so sensitive when we're trying to talk to people who've gone through sorrow, who've gone through tragedy, who are suffering. Because I don't think any of these friends lost anyone. I don't think any of these friends really suffered tremendous difficulty just based on the way that they're talking to him. Because I don't think they had any idea what it felt like to lose a child. Job is here, he's devastated. He was wishing that he would die. He just wished he could have died. And his friends are talking to him this way. It's just, what can you say to that? And then in the last verses, he sort of implies that Job doesn't really know God. In verses 20 and 21, he talks about how those that come after him or those from the west will be astonished, those from the east will be frightened. And then he says, surely such are the dwellings of the wicked, and this is the place of him that knows not God. So he's sort of saying, all of these things happen to the wicked person and to the person who doesn't know God. So, Job, you look at your life right now, it seems like you don't know God if this is happening to you. There's no more hope. The first time each of his friends talked, they would say things like this, and then they would say, but if you turn if you come back to him, he'll turn this around, he'll bless you, he'll make this better. But I don't think they have any concern about giving him any kind of hope anymore. They just want to prove that he's wrong. They're getting upset. You see the emotion that's starting to come out, that they're really, really getting frustrated with Job, and Job is very frustrated with them. And that's normal in these situations of intense trial and suffering. Sometimes people can get very frustrated, and it leaks out in how we talk to each other. And you just see Job answers in verse 2. He said, how long will you vex my soul and break me in pieces with words? And you see that the things that they're saying to him are hurting him. It hurts the way you guys are talking to me. It hurts. You're breaking me in pieces. And this is someone who he's already said how he feels like he's been shattered, how he feels like, he talked about it last time, it feels like he's tearing me in pieces. It feels like he's flaying me open. He said, my gall is poured out on the ground. My reins or my kidneys are open and exposed. He talks about how he felt so exposed and open and broken. And he's saying, you're just breaking me more with your words. How long are you going to do this? And he's, you're not even ashamed to do this to me. You're not ashamed to make yourself strange. You're supposed to be my friends, and it feels like you're strangers. And he says, you're magnifying yourselves against me. But he says, I want you to know, it's God that's overthrowing me. God's the one who's done this, and he's overthrowing me. And Bildad mentioned it before. He said that he's cast into a net by his own feet, in verse 8. But he said, Job says in verse 6, God has thrown his net on me. God has tangled me in his net. It's God doing this. And he says, in verses 7 through 12, you're sort of going to see the things that God has done to Job. And a lot of them are just their direct response to things that Bildad has said. So he says in verse 8, he's fenced up my way that I cannot pass, and he has set darkness in my paths. God has set darkness in my paths. And Bildad talked about the darkness that the ungodly man experiences. And Job was the most godly man, and he says, God put darkness in front of me so that I am struggling in the dark to find my way. And he says in verse 10, he's destroyed me on every side, and I am gone. Just that, I am gone. Just feels like he's just completely knocked me down, and I'm gone. He's whatever sort of building I was, it's just in pieces. And you compare that to verse 12 of what Bildad said. He said, his strength shall be hunger-bitten, and destruction shall be ready at his side. Destruction is just in the wicked man's life. Job's saying, no, God has knocked me down. It's God who did it, not any wickedness in my own heart. And he says, he's broken down on every side. And then in verse 10, he also said, my hope, he's removed or uprooted like a tree. And Bildad talked about how, in verse 16, he talked about how the man, his roots shall be dried up and his branch will be cut off. But Job says, no, I've been uprooted completely. It's not that I've withered. It's that God pulled me out of the ground and removed me. He's like, you don't understand. You don't understand what I'm experiencing. And he talks also in verse 12. He said that it feels like God's brought all of his armies and just encamped them around me. I feel like I'm just surrounded. And what can I do? And then Bildad said that he shall be his tabernacle. He said the king of terrors, death, will be there. And brimstone will be scattered about his habitation. But he says, my tabernacle, it's not that there's nothing there. It's that God has encamped his host around me. It seems like God has made me like one of his enemies and brought all of his forces to bear in my life. And it feels like you just see what Job feels like, that his whole life is just shattered before him. He feels all the force and pressure that it seems like God is just putting so much on him. And what's he supposed to say to what Bildad said? You don't understand. It's not my own fault that I've fallen into this. It's God who's doing it. And he doesn't understand why. And we'll see as you go forward, he's struggling to find an answer. And then when you look, he talks about verses 13 through 20. He talks about how his relationships have changed. And this is something, if you ever go through a deep trial or a deep experience, the relationships you have with people, they're strained and they feel different. And he talks about his brethren are far from him. His acquaintances are like strangers. His kin, his family has failed him. And his familiar friends are forgotten. The people in his house think of him as a stranger. Even he says, my breath is strange to my wife. The relationships are different. And this is something that happens I know with myself, with my brother, I remember when it first happened, my wife would say, you're not the same person. Things have changed. And even our relationship, as we went through, as time went on, and as the sorrow lessens and you start to become more like yourself, she would say, it's nice to see you again and to like really experience that person again. And this is what he's saying. Even my family, even the relationships, everything is different now. And I feel isolated. You feel alone. You feel like no one quite understands what you're feeling. And even with his wife, They both lost their children. But it feels different for me than it would feel for... It felt different for Job than it felt for his wife. They were feeling different things. And even that relationship, though they have the same sorrow, there's that disconnect that happens because it's isolating and you feel alone sometimes. And that's what he's trying to tell his friends. And he's saying, everything, even my inward friends, seems like they abhor me. Those who I love are turned against me. He's saying, you guys, you're against me. You're my friends. And he says, the only thing that's really sticking to me, it seems like everyone else is going away. The only thing that's sticking to me, my skin is just cleaving to my bones. That's the only thing that's with me, is my skin hanging on my bones. That's everything else is away, is escaping from me. And then in verse 21, he's just crying for pity. He's like, my friends, have pity on me. Have pity on me. He says it twice. You just hear him begging. I don't want answers. I don't want you to convict me. I don't want you to try to explain what's going on. I just want you to have pity. And that's the lesson. What can we bring to someone who's gone through some tremendous trial or who's suffering or who's feeling things that we've never felt? Just compassion. Just pity. Just that's all you can bring. You don't have to bring answers. We don't have to explain why God is doing something. You just come and you comfort him. The best thing they did was they sat with him for a week. They sat with him for 7 days and they didn't say anything. That was probably the best. I don't know if maybe they were giving him looks or they had a look on their face like, I can't believe what's happening. Maybe they were judgmental in how they were looking at him. But to just sit there quietly with someone who's suffering, sometimes that's the best thing to do. And not to have words, but just to have pity. He says, the hand of God has touched me. God's hand has touched me, and I just want pity. I don't want your answers. And he says that they're persecuting him as God, and they're not even satisfied. You're not even satisfied with my flesh. Like, what's going to stop you? What's going to satisfy you? Like, what more can I do? What can I give you that's going to make you stop? And then you have this. Probably one of the most well-known sections in the book of Job, verses 23 through 25. He says, oh, that my words were written. I just want something to last. I want this to be recorded. And he says, oh, that they were written in a book, something more substantial, something to last. And he says, that they were graven in a rock and with an iron pen forever. I want this to last. And it's the words that came before. I want what I've gone through and what I'm experiencing to be recorded, and I want it to last. Because everything else is just fade. All his possessions, all his family, everything is gone. All that he has is himself, and he's covered in boils. And I just want something. I want something to last. And then he says, this is what I know. I know that my Redeemer lives. And I know that he shall stand at the latter day upon the earth. And though after my skin worms destroy this body, yet in my flesh shall I see God. So he knew. You see the struggle as he's going through. There's points where he's trusting God. No matter what, I'm going to trust God. And then there's other points where he's crying out to God. Why? Explain. I want to talk to you. I want to figure this out. And he's on this roller coaster. And he reaches these high points, and this is one of them. He says, I know that my Redeemer lives. And when you look at redemption, when you look at a Redeemer, it's someone who will purchase something, who will pay the price for something. And it's this, and you, even if you have, if you ever look at a coupon, it'll have the word redeem on there, that you can redeem the value of this coupon at the store. That you can, when you make the purchase, that value is transferred. And so that's the idea of a redeemer, is one who is going to pay the price for something. And Job wants his Redeemer because he knows that at some way and somehow, maybe not in this life, but in the next one, you know, in the life to come, when he stands before God, he's going to be vindicated for all of this. And he knows that somehow, if it's not in this lifetime, he's going to stand before God. And that's a wonderful thing, to have that confidence that even though maybe I don't get an answer this lifetime, maybe I don't get my opportunity to talk to God and reason with God, but I know that I'm going to stand before Him one day. And that's what He's clinging to. And that's what happens. When you're struggling, you have to cling to the truth that you know. And when everything else is so uncertain and everything else is shaken and you feel like there's no control and you feel like a tree that's been pulled up by its roots and you just have there's nothing holding you down. That's what you have to grab onto. He grabs onto this truth that I know that my Redeemer lives and at the last day He shall stand on the earth. And even though my body dies and decomposes, I know that in my flesh I'm going to see God. And that's what he said, and I will see Him for myself, and my eyes will behold Him and not another. So I'm going to see God. Myself, my own person is going to see Him. And that's what he's clinging to in this tumultuous time. And then he says to his friends, the last two verses, he says, but you would say, why persecute we Him, seeing the root of the matter is found in me? Be ye afraid of the sword, for wrath bringeth the punishment of the sword, that you may know there is a judgment. So he's telling his friends, there is going to be a righteous judgment at some point. And you guys are persecuting me, thinking that the root of the matter, the sin, is somewhere within me. But know that I'm going to stand before God one day, and He's going to vindicate me, and I'm trusting in Him. I know that I have a Redeemer, and there is going to be a judgment one day. And he's challenging his friends that, you know, this is all going to be, one day He's going to work this out. And that's what he's trusting. And he's not, he's just giving himself up to the Lord at this point. And just saying, my Redeemer lives. I know one day I'll be with Him and I'll stand before Him. And my words were written and recorded. And I'm going to be able to stand before God and this is all going to be dealt with. And that's what he wants. And that's the thing that we can cling to, is that whatever happens in this life, the Lord is aware of the situation. The Lord is completely in control of this whole thing from the very beginning. And even though I don't understand what's going on, even though it feels like everything around me is just falling apart, and that it seems like there's darkness, and it seems like God is putting his hand so heavily on me, that I can trust and know that one day I will see him face to face. That our Lord, who suffered and died for us, who the one who suffered for us and suffers with us, that he lives. And that one day, even if it's not in this lifetime, I'll be taken from all of this suffering and this trial. He's going to bring me through this and I'll be with him. And that's all you need. And that's all you can cling to sometimes. But it's a wonderful thing that we know and that we can draw that from this. This man who was suffering so much somehow could find that truth through everything. He could know that his Redeemer lives. Maybe we can just close in prayer. Our God and our Father, we're thankful for who you are. We're thankful for what you've done for us. We're thankful for your Son. And we're thankful that we know that our Redeemer lives. We're thankful that even though we suffer trials, even though trials come in this lifetime, in this world, we can trust you. And we're thankful that we can somehow cling to that truth that our Redeemer lives. That even though everything else is falling apart, even though everything else hurts, and there seems like there's no path in the dark, but we know that we can trust you. And we know that one day, when he comes, we will be with him. And like him, and there will be no more sorrow and no more tears, and every tear shall be wiped away. And we're thankful for that, our God and our Father, for that hope during those times of difficulty. We just pray we would think of Stephen and Mary. We just pray for them during this time, that you would comfort them and give them grace. We just ask for this week, our God and our Father, that you would watch over us and help us and direct us. And we just commit ourselves into your hands and ask these things in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen.